America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day despite the fact that there is great controversy about some comments on the left and some comments on the right. Comments about Israel and Jewish people, particularly American Jews, and how we feel, how we vote. There is a claim by a leading voice on the left that Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel is very directly similar to Vladimir Putin. Is that a fair charge? I don't believe it is. I think it's outrageous. We will get to that. There is, of course, much more significantly, a charge by President Trump that Democrats hate Israel, and therefore any Jewish person who votes for Democrats should be ashamed of themselves because they hate everything about Israel and about their religion. This is a profoundly controversial comment. It's similar to comments that President Trump has made before. Real question here is, why is he doing this? In other words, he does not seem to be out there competing for the Arab voters and Arab American voters in Dearborn, Michigan. Michigan's going to be a very close state. It's going to be a very close race. And frankly, I don't think that either President Trump or President Biden has much chance of making headway with Arab American voters who are deeply committed to the Palestinian cause. It's just not going to happen. But why would President Trump go to this level of political provocation? We will get to that. We will also be speaking a little bit about the return of the Nazis to Germany, which is basically drawing a great deal of attention and drawing a great deal of demonstrations and protests in the street against the neo-Nazi party. But is that even fair to call the AfD, the Alternative für Deutschland, the Alternatives for Germany party, to call that a neo-Nazi party? We will get to that. The Supreme Court has just made a very fateful decision, it seems. It cleared the way just hours ago for Texas to immediately begin enforcing a controversial immigration law that allows state officials to arrest and detain people they suspect of entering the country illegally. The vote in the court was 6-3 with the three liberals, Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan and Kenji Brown Jackson. They voted no, they dissented. The legal challenges to the law are ongoing at a federal appeals court. But this decision, for now at least, hands a significant yet temporary win to Texas and to Governor Abbott, which has been in an ongoing battle with the Biden administration over immigration policy. By the way, part of this gives, it seems to me, a little bit of energy to those people who want to see Governor Abbott of Texas as the running mate to Donald Trump. That's at least one of those things that is on tap now. Concerning President Trump and his comments about American Jews and their overwhelming identification with the Democratic Party, there are lots of people who wonder about that. And it's one of those common questions that I get just talking to people and meeting people or from listeners or from readers who will write to me and say, I don't get it. Why are American Jews so much identified with the Democratic Party here in the United States when clearly when it comes to support for Israel, there's no comparison? The Democratic Party is divided right now between the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the party and, say, even the Chuck Schumer wing. But even the Chuck Schumer wing, Chuck Schumer went out of his way to attack Israel at a moment of a real national peril. Jonathan Greenblatt, who is the president of the Anti-Defamation League, posted an X this morning. I don't call it an X, but what used to be called a tweet. He posted, and he says, accusing Jews of hating their religion because they might vote for a particular party is defamatory and patently false. Serious leaders who care about the historic U.S.-Israel alliance should focus on strengthening rather than unraveling bipartisan support for the state of Israel. That's obviously true. So, meanwhile, what is it that President Trump said exactly? This was in a radio interview, and the topic turned to Israel, and Trump made his allegation that Democrats really do hate Israel. This is clip 3A.
Seemingly that this administration, including Chuck Schumer in the Senate, hate the man that Israel chose as their prime minister. Why do the Democrats hate Bibi Netanyahu?
I actually think they hate Israel.
Yes.
I don't think they hate it. I think they hate Israel. And the Democrat Party hates Israel. And the Democrat Party, if you remember, when many Israeli representatives, including Netanyahu, when they came to the country trying, begging, at that time President Obama, please don't make the Iran nuclear deal, which is a disaster and was a disaster. And I ended it. But unfortunately, they didn't do anything with the ending of it. I ended it and would have had a new deal made with Iran. It would have been good for everybody, and there would have been no nuclear weapons. You know, they're very close to getting a nuclear weapon right now.
Yes.
And once they have that, it becomes a different form of negotiation, a much more difficult negotiation. But I really believe they hate Israel.
Okay, Democrats hate Israel? That's a terrible thing to say. And then he went on talking about the anomaly that the party that he says hates Israel, actually 71% of American Jews, according to a Pew Research Organization study, 71% of American Jews identify as Democrats. And this is a party that allegedly hates Jews. Here's what Trump had to say about that.
And they also see a lot of votes. Don't forget, when you see those Palestinian marches, even I'm amazed at how many people are in those marches. And guys like Schumer see that. And to him, it's votes. I think it's votes more than anything else, because he was always pro-Israel. He's very anti-Israel. Now, any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves, because Israel will be destroyed. You have Iran now making a nuclear weapon. None of that would have happened with me. That's a big thing. With me, Iran was broke. They were absolutely stone-cold broke. There was no terrorism because they didn't have money to fund Hamas and Hezbollah and the other 28 groups. They had no money. They were stone-cold broke.
The role of the Trump administration, just like there would be no attack in Ukraine, there would have been no attack by Hamas. Yes, a lot of this has to do with Trump, but it has really created some problems for President Trump with members of the Jewish community. And actually, it seems to me fair-minded people generally. So what is the right answer? Why is it that American Jews support the Democratic Party so overwhelmingly? We'll get to that coming up on the Medved Show. Hey And on the Michael Medved show, the White House has already responded to President Trump's comments in a radio interview. His comments about the American Jewish community must be hating Israel and hating their own religion because of their support for Democrats. I actually think they hate Israel. Trump responded to a question, and I think they hate Israel, and the Democratic Party hates Israel. And then he went on to say that any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about their religion, and they should be ashamed of themselves because Israel will be destroyed. And look, I mean, Trump only got 24% of the Jewish vote in 2016 when he ran against Hillary. And then he got 30%. He did better because he'd established a record. He had moved the embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. He had recognized the Golan Heights. He had arranged the Abraham Accords, which were a terrific diplomatic triumph and really helped the people of Israel. So against Biden, Biden got 68% of the American Jewish vote. Trump got 30% of the American Jewish vote. And the idea that you're going to somehow persuade American Jews to come over and vote for you by making a comment that has sort of elements of charges of disloyalty, that the comments they report in Time magazine sparked immediate backlash from the White House, President Joe Biden's campaign, and Jewish leaders. The vast majority of Jewish Americans identify as Democrats, but Trump has often accused them of disloyalty, perpetuating what critics say is an anti-Semitic trope. At the White House today, spokesperson Andrew Bates cast the comments by Trump as vile and unhinged anti-Semitic rhetoric without mentioning Trump by name. Okay, this is not wild and unhinged anti-Semitic rhetoric. It is unhinged. And again, what is the purpose of making this kind of comment? Donnie Deutsch, who's a regular on MSNBC and has a strong Jewish identity, he posted an X that says, how dare you, Donald Trump, tell me what it takes to be a good Jew. This is what he sounded like on the Morning Joe program.
Donnie, I think, out of all the things that Donald Trump has ever said that have offended my core, this is it. How dare you, Donald Trump, tell me what it takes to be a good Jew and not be a good Jew, what it takes to love Israel and not love Israel. First of all, you stand for nothing what Judaism is all about being a decent human being, about being kind to others. You are the farthest thing from what anybody should say what a good Jew is or isn't. And make no mistake about it, for anybody who says, I'm voting for Donald Trump because he's automatically good for Israel, he would turn on Jews in a second. This is a guy who has a fondness for Hitler, according to his ex chief of staff, John Kelly. This is a guy who said, there's good people on the both sides of Charlottesville. He would turn on Jews in a second if it was in his best interest. I know this could be very controversial. He doesn't care about Israel. He doesn't care about, he cares about Donald Trump. And how dare you tell me what it takes to be a good Jew or not?
Okay, again, it would be fairly difficult if someone came out there and said, it turns out that the great majority of evangelical Christians in America, and of course, there are far more evangelical Christians than there are Jews in the United States. Jews are about 2% of the American population. Evangelical Christians now, it's gone down, but they say that evangelical Christians are about 14% of the American population. But in any event, you can imagine how outraged people would be if all of a sudden there was someone like Joe Biden who said, how dare you claim to be a good Christian when you're voting for Donald Trump? or when you're voting for a non-Democrat. The implication that religious authenticity comes along with a political identity is a very difficult thing. The history of the Jewish community in America and the history of the two parties really does raise a question. So first of all, why is there such a disproportionate number of American Jews who identify as Democrats? And that really goes back to the Franklin D. Roosevelt era. And Roosevelt was the first Democratic president to get the overwhelming kind of Jewish support that most Democratic presidents and presidential candidates have received. And Roosevelt got that support, ironically, despite the fact that he did very little to create a haven for refugees when Jews were trying to escape from Nazi Germany. And again, this is all very personal. My grandfather and my mother and my uncle came to the United States in 1934 when my mom was nine. And they had the good sense to get out. But during that period when Roosevelt was president, the Democratic Party at that time was very strongly influenced by the Dixiecrats, by people like Martin Dees, who was a member of Congress, who was profoundly anti-Semitic. And there were people who just didn't want to allow Jewish immigration in the United States because they didn't like Jews that much. Didn't matter. The feeling of Roosevelt and being a governor of New York, there was a saying, it was a Yiddish joke, which is that alle Menschen haben drei Welter, all in Yiddish, it's all people, meaning Jewish people, have three worlds, and it's Diesenwelt, this world, the world to come, and Roosevelt, which is Franklin D. Roosevelt. And part of that historic support for Roosevelt, which was only intensified when Harry Truman actually went against the majority of his cabinet to recognize the State of Israel, which was formally recognized 12 minutes after it was announced in Jerusalem, the independence of Israel. There was a historic sense that that the Democratic Party was home for Jewish people. Part of that was geographic, and it had to do with where Jews lived. They lived in very Democratic states like New York. But we will get to this and more. How's it happen that this traditional association with Democrats and Jews has lasted till now? We'll continue on the Medved Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, very quickly to try to complete some of the answers to what has been a perplexing question for many, many Americans. And there are a lot of Jewish people who ask this question, because particularly in the Orthodox community, which represents total about 10% of the U.S. Jewish population, the percentages are reversed. Orthodox people are overwhelmingly Republican and overwhelmingly conservative and voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. But that's just that segment of the community. And part of it is because Orthodox observant people are more comfortable and less threatened and less worried about the influence of evangelical Christians on the Republican Party, because there is no question about it that for many American Jews, particularly those of the Reform Jewish persuasion, the same way that they have all kinds of disagreements with the more conservative elements of within their own faith, there is a great hesitation and worry about the evangelical influence. And I remember the first time we ever had Alan Dershowitz on the radio show, and this is how long ago it was he was objecting to the Bush inauguration, the George W. Bush inauguration in 2001, because he had for the first time invited a very specifically Christian pastor to give the invocation at the inauguration, who specifically mentioned Jesus Christ and faith in Jesus Christ, which really hadn't been done before. And Alan, you know, I mean, we disagree on a lot of things. We agree on a lot of things. But it seemed to me that to make a big deal out of this was not appropriate. But there is that kind of discomfort. Donnie Deutsch, who we were hearing before, he got involved. He was with a conservative commentator. I won't say which one. It's a female conservative commentator who said on the air, "Well, I respect the fact that you're Jewish. I just wish you could become a completed Jew." And the term completed Jew at that time was used by evangelically minded people to mean that you would become a Jew who would embrace Jesus as your Lord and Savior. And the truth of the matter is, if you embrace Jesus as your Lord and Savior, definitionally you're a Christian. And Christians and Jews, thank God, get along remarkably well in this country. And that's very true of religious Christians and religious Jews and people with lighter rulers. We get along. However, historically, it's uncomfortable to try to erase the difference. So that influence in the Republican Party is one of the things that I think has made it very difficult for groups like a group that I've been involved with very actively. I've spoken for them literally dozens of times all around the country and states all around the country, is the Republican Jewish Coalition. And one of the difficulties in building a Republican base has been this fear that on a range of issues, there was more of an evangelical influence in the Republican Party. The other aspect of this has to do with, I talked about the history of Roosevelt. My grandmother, may she rest in peace, came here from Ukraine when she was 49. And my father was born shortly after she arrived here in the United States. But in any event, she had a picture in her home in South Philadelphia framed of Franklin D. Roosevelt. And it was the only framed picture, not David Ben-Gurion, not any Jewish Israeli. It's Franklin D. Roosevelt. And one of the things that I think is very true, and it's true of many Jewish people, is you have an instinct to try to connect with the past. That is a real Jewish impulse, is trying to have at least some element of the tradition of your family that you're upholding. And especially with so few Jews being actively religious, going to synagogue every week. The synagogue attendance, supposedly for American Jews at large, about 8% go regularly every week. But rather than connecting with that tradition, the religious tradition, the authentic tradition of Judaism, there are a lot of people who connect with almost a sacred fervor with the Democratic Party, because people have grandparents who had framed pictures of Roosevelt, and who were part of the big city Jewish machines in cities like New York and Chicago and Philadelphia. Jewish people became Democrats like other people in those urban areas because it was a Democratic Party that was organized and appealed to them and brought them in. And the one thing that people can say I have in common with my grandparents, my great-grandparents, would be this affiliation with the Democratic Party, the Democratic tradition. So that certainly explains more than any substance in the Democratic Party. For instance, a very Democratic commentator, Joy Reid, just said on MSNBC that there was a comparison between Vladimir Putin, the recently reelected evil dictator, and between Prime Minister Netanyahu. Why? This is what Joy Reid had to say. Clip two.
Netanyahu, who leads Israel's most right-wing and conservative government in the country's history, has big plans to curb the judiciary there. Those plans include limiting the Supreme Court's ability to review parliamentary decisions and changing the way judges are appointed. This is our Democratic ally in the region. I mean, let's face it, Benjamin Netanyahu and Vladimir Putin have something in common. An ongoing war stance that is deeply unpopular, along with criticism that they are prolonging their wars in order to stay in power. Netanyahu, like Putin, has mastered the art of staying in power while pushing the country further and further to the right. Even as fears of famine grow, and as he is accused of using starvation of civilians as a method of warfare in the occupied Gaza Strip, which, by the way, is a war crime. As war rages, as people starve and children die, and as the fate of Rafah still remains unclear, Netanyahu battles for his reputation, legacy, and power. It is an uncertain time for his reign. And as we've learned from Putin, that is where the world must worry the most.
Okay, this is outrageous. And the one thing that is most outrageous is Netanyahu did not start the war. Putin did. Netanyahu has been waging a defensive war and is waiting until there is some kind of surrender, some kind of assurance, some kind of definitive defeat so it won't happen again. This is so extraordinary that she would compare the two of them. And by the way, Netanyahu was also elected and then de-elected and then elected again. This doesn't happen to Putin because the elections mean nothing. But the elections in Israel, the Netanyahu's party, the Likud party, represents about one-third the votes in the Knesset, and then they have to build a coalition. The whole idea of comparing Netanyahu to Putin is absurd. We'll be back. Michael Medved show, talking about the controversy about American policy in the Middle East. And the one thing that I agree with Senator Schumer on, and I wish he had not made his 40-minute speech on the floor of the Senate, basically attacking the Netanyahu government in Israel. But what he said at that time was, and what he said in reaction to President Trump's comments, saying that anybody who voted Democratic hated Judaism and couldn't be a good Jew and hated Israel and was working for Israel's destruction. Schumer said to make Israel a partisan issue only hurts Israel and the U.S.-Israeli relationship. And if you talk to Israelis, by the way, as I do all the time, as people know, because we've had him on the show so frequently, my brother Jonathan has lived and been a business leader in Israel for 40 years. And the one thing that Israelis who have origins in the United States and have connections in the United States understand more than anything else is that part of what Israel needs is not to be controversial in the United States, not to be, well, the Republicans on this side, Democrats on this side. I don't know how that happened with Ukraine. Ukraine should also be a unifying issue, it seems to me. But right now it's terrible for Ukraine and it's terrible for the United States that there are so many Republicans who seem to lean to the Putin side of things. We don't need that, God forbid, with Israel. And listen to how carefully National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan talked about this new team that Netanyahu is sending to the United States to discuss U.S. concerns about Israel's upcoming operation in Rafah. This is clip 7.
The president has rejected, and did again today, the straw man that raising questions about Rafah is the same as raising questions about defeating Hamas. That's just nonsense. Our position is that Hamas should not be allowed a safe haven in Rafah or anywhere else. But a major ground operation there would be a mistake. It would lead to more innocent civilian deaths, worsen the already dire humanitarian crisis, deepen the anarchy in Gaza, and further isolate Israel internationally. More importantly, the key goals Israel wants to achieve in Rafah can be done by other means. On the call today, President Biden asked the Prime Minister to send a senior interagency team composed of military, intelligence, and humanitarian officials to Washington in the coming days to hear U.S. concerns about Israel's current Rafah planning and to lay out an alternative approach that would target key Hamas elements in Rafah and secure the Egypt-Gaza border without a major ground invasion. The Prime Minister agreed that he would send a team. Obviously, he has his own point of view on a Rafah operation, but he agreed that he would send a team to Washington to have this discussion and have this engagement. And we look forward to those discussions.
Okay, with the administration saying that they are committed to no safe haven for Hamas terrorists and Hamas mass murderers in Rafah or anywhere else, if they can somehow put forward a plan that would actually deny that kind of shelter, that kind of survival to the Hamas stone-cold killers. And by the way, at the same time, get the release of the remaining hostages. There's still over 100 of them. If that could be done without a ground invasion of Rafah, that certainly is what most Israelis want. And it's what this government wants. And the idea of trying to make Netanyahu into some kind of monster rather than being somebody who knows his way around the United Nations, who knows his way around capitals of the world. He's even maintained a decent relationship with Russia. And by the way, that's important because there are 1.5 million Jewish people of Russian ancestry who live in Israel and actually have their own political party and political interests and are part of the Israeli political spectrum. In any event, there was also Jake Sullivan who spoke in the White House accusing Peter Doocy of asking loaded questions, because Peter Doocy asked a question about Biden allegedly shouting in the White House. This probably came up because of the claim that there was a column about Biden that called him Old Yeller because he was yelling during some of his fairly well-received State of the Union address. But here is Jake Sullivan taking on Peter Doocy of Fox. Listen.
A report that when President Biden was told his handling of the war between Israel and Hamas was starting to affect his poll numbers, the quote is, he began to shout and swear. So when he does that, is he shouting and swearing about Netanyahu or about Hamas or about his poll numbers?
This is the when did you stop beating your spouse question, because I don't think he ever did that. You use that as the premise of your question, which is when he does that. I've never seen him do that, shout or swear in response to that. So from my perspective, that particular report is not correct.
Again, it's a way of avoiding answering the question without either shouting or swearing. Meanwhile, there's a certain amount of shouting or swearing, well, not really, but certainly spirited argument in the Supreme Court because it's one of the biggest free speech cases which is being argued today in the Supreme Court. And the oral arguments in Murthy versus Missouri are worth hearing, because the issues are so important, and they have to do with the extent to which the government of the United States can appropriately influence media and prevent them from conveying misinformation. And obviously that involves not only issues like the pandemic, but it involves very fundamental issues about the operations of democracy, and we will get to that issue coming up. We will also be talking a little bit about the rise of the far right, the neo-Nazi right in Germany, and the deep concern that that has inspired among Germans, and the idea that there is now another former candidate for president on the Republican side who has said he will never vote for Biden. That's not a surprise. But also that he will never vote for Donald J. Trump. Which one of the former Republicans has said that? Well, it's not Vivek Ramaswamy because the Trump campaign has announced that they are not going to be. Now, this is not official, but it is according to fairly high-ranking sources in the Trump campaign, that they will not be considering Vivek Ramaswamy for vice president, which, given how many people he was able to offend and repel during his brief, short-lived presidential campaign, that's probably a good plan. However, President Trump has indicated that he is very positive toward Mr. Ramaswamy, and he will be under consideration for some important cabinet position. One of the possibilities that they mentioned was the Homeland Security Secretary. We will be getting to that and to more as well. The idea that America is depressed right now, that's an idea that was taken on by Bill Maher. Is it a question of mental health that has collapsed? Last Friday, Bill Maher talked about depression, not economic depression, but emotional depression. Why has it befallen the United States in such a gloomy sense when we remain this greatest nation on God's green earth?